Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Yeah, hi, my name's Kevin Sturge. I'm an independent consultant in the contingent workforce space, helping companies either develop strategies for staffing, hiring, or any of the platforms in that space.
Kevin, thanks so much for making time joining us, John, on the Ivy Podcast. Before we dive in and spend a great deal of time talking about the contingent workforce strategies and all of the great practical recommendations, give us a thumbnail version of your career prior to that.
Sure. And thanks for having me, John. Really appreciate it. So I've always been in the professional services space. I started my career there, grew a company there, and then ended up working for Cisco, helping their partners grow their professional services, ultimately to help Cisco sell their product. But it was very much a selling mode. And then after about 7 years of doing that, I moved into procurement and managed Cisco's contingent labor workforce, which was about 55,000 people. And I think it's very interesting in that all through my career, I feel I've always been selling, and I was listening to one of your earlier podcasts with Frank, but selling and buying are the same skills. And it was very interesting to me that making that transition from, you know, I'm a sales guy or I'm helping business development, going into procurement, it's like, well, how's my skills going to translate? And it translated. You're used to negotiating. You're looking for, you know, a good deal for both parties because you shouldn't walk away bad, right? And, you know, it's a very, very similar skill.
Well, that's very interesting. And I definitely agree with you from that perspective, because at the end of the day, whenever you're selling, you have to also understand, you know, the motivations, intentions of the buyer. And
right. Totally.
I think it's a two-way street. So appreciate you sharing that. As a consultant and expert in contingent workforce and just overall agility from that perspective, share with us, what are the different trends and ideas in this space that you are very excited about, especially these days?
You may need to cut me off, right? Because I get excited about a lot of things. Okay. So I see an emerging trend of total talent management. I see the talent acquisition teams have been focused predominantly on, you know, the full-time employee and geared up for that. And then there's usually another team that focuses in contingent workforce, in procurement or somewhere else in an organization. But I think they're starting to think about coming together because you're looking for the same outcomes. You're looking for people that, you know, will meet your organizational needs. You're also looking to protect your brand because protecting your brand during an interview is very, very important. And you know, the processes that you follow from a contingent worker and a full-time employee, although they're at different levels, John, they're actually the same processes all the way through, right? You both do background checks and, you know, make sure to take references and stuff like that. They're both very, very similar. So I think you can gain some economies of scale and some other advantages by pulling those together and looking at talent overall, whether you're a full-time employee or a contingent worker. Super excited about that. Really excited about the trends that's happening in the contingent workforce world. Loads of acquisitions going on, Workforce Logic, Pro Unlimited, Beeline acquiring Joined Up, which is this wonderful platform for, you know, the blue collar workers, scheduling blue collar workers, and Workday and Vinly as well. All of that's going on in a space that predominantly was very quiet, at one point. And really the third thing that gets me is really all of the platforms, they're really growing in this space. You know, I now can get help with how much I should pay for somebody. I can get help with analyzing my statement of work to see how much I should be paying or whether I'm overpaying. And also there's a lot going on in talent clouds and the reuse of talent. When you get a big organization and you maybe you have a contingent worker for 6 months and then you say goodbye at the end of that contract, how to reuse that individual somewhere else in the corporation so you don't have to, you know, lose time in bringing that individual up to speed and things like that.
So you've talked a little bit about total talent management. I'm curious, for the organizations that are not maybe utilizing such strategy when designing their overall workforce, what are some of the practical recommendations that you may have utilizing a framework as such for companies to take advantage of, you know, different trends like that?
Certainly, a great question. So I can tell you where we started when we looked at this is we just basically started by process mapping what we did when we were looking for a contingent worker and what we did when we're looking for a full-time employee, and then went through all of the steps that's in those processes and then looked at, you know, who does it, who's responsible for it, how much effort goes into it. And we actually in those processes saw 36 and 35 activities, and 34 of them were almost exactly the same, just a different intensity. And I think when you do that process mapping and you see that two processes are very, very similar, it just makes sense that you can bring them together, right? Then you get those economies of scale. And I'm really big on brand protection. I think that, you know, when you're representing a company at an interview, it's really important to represent that company really strong and, you know, get across all the brand values. And if you've got that in one team, that's very, very consistent. And it should not be any different from an FTE as a contingent worker.
When it comes to contingent workforce strategy for, I mean, you consult organizations of various size. Yeah. What are the most common pitfalls or, I guess, misconceptions that you encounter through these engagements when it comes to utilizing contingent workforce as part of the overall strategy for organizations of various size?
Yeah, what a great question too. I think that, you know, fundamentally, that there's legal reasons why you need to treat those workers differently. I just talked about how you should treat them the same during the intake process, but legally you need to treat them differently just to protect your organization from lawsuits, right? So I think that there's that side of it in how do you make sure that your FTEs are being treated differently to contingent workers, because they're not on the same benefits plan. They're not on the same, you know, PTO schedule as an FTE. And therefore recognizing the employer of record is potentially a staffing agency or a managed service provider. I also think that, you know, how do you hold managed service providers or statement of work based work accountable? So, you know, make sure you've got very good payment milestones or delivery milestones built into your projects that you're doing. Too many times we try to hire people, you know, within a statement of work, and really we're not managing a project, we're managing individuals, which is really not what we should be doing there.
Right, absolutely. And it's an interesting space. We could probably spend the rest of the podcast talking about this. Sure. But just moving on to, you've mentioned interviewing, and it's a very complex space. I've been on three sides of the interview equation as a consultant, as a hiring manager, and also on the agency side as part of the staffing and recruitment, and plus what we're building the technology for that. Right. Share your thoughts on just overall your strategies to improve the interview experience, for whether that's for hiring manager or for the candidate, mainly because the reason I ask is from personal observation throughout all these years, a lot of interviews are based on that kind of the flawed approach of almost what are the weaknesses we can tolerate in a particular candidate versus the strengths that are missing on our team.
Right.
Here's some thoughts from that perspective.
Yeah, I give you some practical advice, and then, you know, build on what you just said. Read the resume before the interview. I've seen so many people, especially when I partner with people on certain interviews, that for the first time they're looking at the resume as the candidate joins the interview, which I think is terrible, because you want to connect with that candidate very quickly, right? It's like, you know, how do I make someone feel at ease? Oh, John, I see you went to this school. You know, did you come across this professor? Or I see you worked here. What did you work on there? Just make that candidate feel that, oh, you know, he sort of knows me, you know, and feels warm to that. Write down the individual's first name as well, so you're not sitting there going, oh, you know, and trying to find it on the resume. Just very, you know, practical stuff. But what's most important now, with the talent shortages that we have, is that interviews need to be a priority. And if you get a candidate, especially in some of the hot spaces in tech, even in some areas in finance or whatever, you've got to schedule that interview as quickly as you can. Next week is not the right answer, right? I'm moving an interview around because you've got a new priority that comes in. It's not going to get you the candidates. The candidates that are hot, candidates that are best, are moving very, very quickly. I mean, they're just, you know, schedule it, choose the priority, don't move it, and prep for it.
Right.
Do you agree? Do you disagree? Or
no, 100%. I mean, those are definitely valid observations. At the end of the day, it's also, you know, the importance of structuring that as a two-way street, as a conversation, and give the candidate an opportunity to understand your leadership style. Is this the type of culture that I can
drive? Right.
But it's such a, you know, short period of time that for you to make that determination also puts a lot of limitations from, you know, on that, from that perspective.
Yeah, I think you're right, because I think it has to be a discussion, right? We spoke about how managers need to prepare for it, but candidates need to prepare for it as well, right? You know, as a bare minimum, you've got to read the profile of the people interviewing you on LinkedIn and see what else they've published. You've got to know about the company. Was there any news items this morning, you know, that we should bring up at the interview? You know, like, have you just been acquired, or are you just acquiring someone? Again, it shows that you're switched on and connected to that company. I think that, you know, there's prep on both sides. And, and this is a hot subject for me, especially early in career people, you know, preparing people for interviews, because it is very nerving, right? And as you say, it's a very, very short conversation. But mm-hmm. write down a whole series of questions, right? You don't have to go through all of them, but have questions prepared so that you know, you can keep that conversation going and show what value you can bring to that organization.
Right, absolutely. When it comes to just with the war on talent out there, and another layer for, you know, the war on retention, especially coming out of, you know, the pandemic, and with organizations struggling to, you know, retain the top talent, it becomes imperative to develop, you know, such strategies that really builds and fosters that culture, you know, from the very beginning, rather than being so reactive to, you know, the current times or the whatever the trends are going on in the industry. What are your thoughts on just organizations that are more successful than the others when it comes to retaining top talent? What are some of the things that they do in different, and what do you consult some of your client companies when it comes to building and fostering an environment of retention?
I think on retention, there's a whole host of things, and, you know, maybe not in the right order, John, but, you know, how you treat the individuals, you know, they're more than just line items on a spreadsheet. How you train managers to manage individuals, to just be flexible with them and get to know your employees. I think that there's a lot more focus on corporate social responsibility now as well, and how does a company embrace that and allow its employees to give back, either with time, you know, or with money, allowing yourself to come as your authentic self and, you know, turn up to work how you want to turn up to work, right? I think that, you know, that's increasingly important. But I think also nowadays it's about flexibility, right? You know, when I started work, you know, I walked in the office at 9 and left at 5:30. Now it doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter when we work, right? You know, as long as the work product is done and in a timely way, it doesn't matter in some industries, not just when we work, but what location we're working from too, right? So I think that flexibility just helps. And an area that's sort of overlooked is, you know, mobility within an organization as well. You know, one of the things I would praise an awful lot about Cisco Systems You can work in 5, 6, 7 different areas in that and really look at different aspects of building your career. Like I just told you earlier, you know, I was in the channels team and I moved to a procurement team, right? And, you know, you're never going to do that, you know, going out of Cisco from a channel team, joining, you know, another company's procurement team or finance team or whatever. So that movement within companies, learning different skills, you know, I think is also very important.
Yes, absolutely. And to take that a little bit further, the whole concept of future of work has you know, has been on the rise, especially in the past couple of years, with organizations seeking various ways to deploy human capital. In terms of just the overall freelance and the gig worker and the future of work state, tell us a little bit more about your thoughts on how you think about that and how can organizations really embrace that concept and succeed from overall just attracting the top talent to their organizations.
Yeah, I think it's some of what I just mentioned, right? You know, there's a lot of choice that goes into that location, you know, how you work, hours of work. But also, you know, do you have project-based work as well, right? So you're not, you know, necessarily just reporting to John, you're going in to do a project 3 months, 6 months, a year, and then you roll to the next project. So that flexibility, I think, is also important. And giving people time, you know, to make sure they're mapping out their career as well within that journey too. So I think project-based work is increasingly important. And I think it's also, it also benefits corporations as well, right? Because you start with projects, you bring in the best people to do the projects. It doesn't necessarily just have to be the people that's in your organization.
Right, right, right. Absolutely. And when it comes to, for gig workers, contingent workers, and just overall, any new employees that join organizations these days in a fully virtual capacity, in a remote environment, it adds another layer of complexity when it comes to onboarding and just overall initial experience. And to take that a little bit further from just overall networking perspective to build those relationships.
Yeah.
Difficult to begin with, and it's even more challenging to do that virtually. What are your thoughts on that? What are some of the areas that some of the candidates and workers can really tap into when it comes to succeeding in that space? And on the other side of the spectrum, how can organizations prepare for that initial experience and really create that environment for the new employees to succeed virtually?
Totally. So that's a really easy question. Thank you for that. First of all, I think that there's some really simple answers I'm giving you here, John. I hope that's okay. But video, right? So we're sitting on this, you know, recording this podcast, but we're using a Zoom. We're on video with each other. I think that video and switching it on is super important. Now, there are reasons maybe you can't have video on, it's super early in the morning, or, you know, the bandwidth is very low, but most of the time you should have video on because that creates that connection, right? Take time at the beginning of calls, whether it's a team call or one-to-one, just to talk about some of the social stuff, because you would do that in person. Don't jump into that agenda. We started this call talking about how our Thanksgiving works, right? Super important, get that connection. And also try and have some fun stuff, right? Whether that's, you know, a scheduled cup of coffee or wine if it's in the evening, or whatever your favorite drink is. But also, as some of our, you know, lockdown is easing, you know, what can you do as for an event, you know, meet in an office for a couple of hours or stuff like that, you know, as things lighten up. You know, to make people feel welcome. I'll give you an example. My daughter changed jobs during, you know, one of the lockdowns. And as things eased up, her manager took her on a tour of the office. Now, it's a very, very simple thing to do. There's only two people in the office. It was a huge office. No one else were there. But she felt a different connection to that organization by just going into that physical office and seeing what it's like, right? So, you know, where possible, do some physical stuff too. I also think, you know, the other thing as a leader, you need to take account of people on the screen as well, or maybe they're not on screen all of the time, to help bring them into the medium, right? Because with video, we have equalized the playing field a little bit, because we've all been on calls where there's 10 people in the office at headquarters and there's two people dialed into it. They don't have the same voice, right? But I think that we have equaled out a lot, but just make sure that people get in time, to voice their opinions or to add value. And I think that you also almost need to be that conductor at the front of the orchestra that you say, okay, I haven't heard from John for a while, and he's usually hot on this space. Is he okay? You know, is something going on? And, you know, either bring him into that meeting if he's not an introvert, or, you know, have a chat with him later. Is everything okay? I think we need to be aware of that. Okay. And by the way, John, that sort of reminds me, I think that the other thing that on retention as well is your company's point of view, and I get asked this a lot on mental health support. You know, we're increasingly talking a lot about that, you know, in normal world, but I think companies are embracing that and giving a lot more mental health support and actually talking about it a lot more in open forums as well. And sorry, I meant to add that to your point of, you know, what makes you want to stay somewhere. Because when you're looking at employees and concerned about their mental health, I think it just shows what sort of company you are.
Great. Absolutely. Those are definitely very valid points. Thank you for sharing that. In terms of your content diets, the resources that you consume on a daily basis to keep yourself educated ahead of the curve, yeah, especially in, yeah, your particular industry,
yeah,
share those resources with us.
Yeah. Listen, tell me if I'm not allowed to say this, but I'm a networking whore, right? So I will call up people, speak to people. And, you know, I love just receiving information from just basic networking. John, I am an introvert, but I just want to talk about this space because I'm so excited about it. But, you know, I think to answer your question directly, the Staffing Industry Association, I look at their news feeds and you know, what they're up to. There's this other organization called Club VMSA. It's just a great group. It's a great group of people that all did the job I did.
We attended that session in New York a couple of weeks.
So I attended the one after that in Half Moon Bay, and it was the first event I've been to in person for 2 years. You know, it was great. So you know, they're my main sources, unless something catches my eye on the news feed. But, you know, just talk to people and connect to people that you used to work with or that you want to talk to. You'll be amazed that, you know, people are happy to share information. I mean, I'll give you one example. From my previous employer, Cisco Systems, I wanted to learn a lot more about, you know, how do you schedule blue collar workers, and, you know, what is different between hourly paid individuals as opposed to, you know, salaried individuals. And it was just a great discussion. This individual there spent, you know, an hour with me, just educating me on what the differences were. You know, if you need 100 people for a shift and it's a Saturday, you schedule 106, right? Or, you know, so just, it was just great. You know, and people are happy to share that information.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of technology solutions that you're very excited about in your space that really help organizations to take to the next level, especially when it comes to contingent workforce or anything around talent, share with us any of the recommendations or any unique finds that you have been personally very excited about.
Yeah, I mean, and some of these that I had experience with working before, and some of them, you know, working more recently. So I love the platform Brightfield. I think Brightfield gives us a lot of information about contingent workers and about, you know, SOW analytics, HireRight, which is, you know, a talent orchestration, talent cloud. And I love some of the innovation that we're seeing in the VMS space. You know, and a lot of what I see within Beeline on how they produce data for contingent workforce managers to work with, I just see as just very, very compelling and very easy to use. And so they're the sort of things that, you know, as we covered at the beginning of the conversation, was they're also things that get me excited, right? And, you know, how do we look at you know, data and diversity and all of that sort of thing we get from those platforms.
Right, right, right. Absolutely. Definitely very, very robust list of recommendations, especially, you know, in the ever-changing technology space.
Totally.
There's just so many new entrants and a lot of innovation going on, which is very exciting. Kevin, last but not least, in terms of the book that you're currently reading and the one that you always recommend to others, share with us those recommendations.
Now, just to be fair, I did clear this before, right? So I have two book recommendations, so not just one. So the book I love is Sway, The Irresistible Pull of Irrational Behavior. And it is just an amazing book. And it just talks about why people are programmed to do things. And, you know, understanding that is just helps you just be a better negotiator and, yeah, better person as well. And really a book maybe that's in this space that we're talking about is Delivering Happiness by the late Tony Hsieh. I think it's just a great book on how, you know, he developed his career and his companies. But the bit that I like is his focus on doing the right things for his customers. And related to the space we're talking about, John, is that when he pulls in customer service agents during the first week of onboarding, at the end of every week, he will offer those employees $1,000 or maybe it's more to leave. And what he would find is that will be a good way of getting people that are not committed to the cause of Zappos and making customers happy. And I just, and you've got to see that that's a very compelling sum of money for somebody that's hourly paid, you know, but he, that to him made sure that he had the right people in customer service at Zappos. And I think that says a lot. So a really good book on just, you know, doing the right thing for your customers. And yeah.
Kevin, thanks so much for those recommendations, and for we'll make those titles available in the show notes. As with all the guests on the podcast, I love doing a follow-up recording in about a year where we revisit a conversation from a year ago and see if everything we've discussed still makes sense. And still
Oh, God. So you're going to hold us accountable, right?
Yeah. Those are usually the most fun, and I'm definitely looking forward to doing that with you as well.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.